As I said, school starts for Westerville on Tuesday. And you heard some may be starting on Wednesday in other districts around here, maybe a few days off. But on Tuesday here in Westerville, there'll be hundreds, maybe thousands of kids heading to school. Yeah, brings back memories, doesn't it? Remember going to school on the first day? Maybe it's harder on parents than it is on kids. You know, it's hard to give up summer, but it's tough on parents as kids go back to school. Maybe it's toughest on the parents of kindergartners, you know, sending their little one to school for the first time. Heard a story a while back about a little boy. I'll call him Tommy. Tommy was a kindergartner heading off to school. He was all set to walk to school. He had his backpack and had his new clothes. But Tommy's mother wasn't doing quite as well as Tommy. She was a worrier, and so she said, I've got to walk Tommy's school. It's only 2 blocks to the school, straight down the street, but I'm going to walk him to school. So Tommy and his mother, they walked to school. First day, second day, third day. Tommy comes home after the third day and says to his mother, I don't want you to walk me to school anymore. The big kids don't have their mothers walking them to school. I want to be like the big kids. Well, they had a little discussion about this. But Tommy persisted, and so mother gave in, said, you can walk to school with the other kids, and I won't walk with you. But she was still worried about it, and she had to figure out some way to keep an eye on him. And then the idea came to her, their next-door neighbor. She went to her next-door neighbor, who happened to be named Mrs. Goodnest. He said, could you follow behind Tommy to school? Just sort of, kind of far enough back that he doesn't notice you, but close enough that you can watch him. And Mrs. Goodness said, sure. And actually, my little toddler is awake at that hour. It would be good to take a walk, get a little exercise, and we'll follow Tommy to school. So they started doing that. The next morning, Mrs. Goodness and her daughter, Marcy, got out of the house and followed Tommy and his friends as Tommy walked with the bigger kids to school. And they did this for a whole week. And Tommy was walking one more day with his little shadows following him behind. And his, Tommy's friend says, you see that lady back there? She's following us every day. Do you know who she is? And Tommy goes, yeah, I know who she is. Well, who is she? Well, she's my neighbor, Mrs. Goodnest. Well, why is she following you? Well, Tommy said, well, it goes like this. Every night when I say my prayers, my mom makes me recite the 23rd Psalm. And in it, it says, surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. And so I am stuck with them. All right. That was a bad joke. I get it. But I couldn't think of a better way to introduce this morning's sermon topic, goodness. For several weeks now, I have been doing a series of sermons on words to live by, and this idea came from a novel that I read where one of the main characters lived his whole life guided by one single word, and I thought, what would that word be if I were to guide my life? And I, of course, looked to the Bible for what words I might turn to guide my life. And one of those words is goodness. Goodness would certainly be a word that could be a guiding word for my life. Imagine what it would be like if all my actions, all my thoughts were guided with the idea that I was to be good in all circumstances. But of course, that raises the question, what exactly is good and goodness? We use the term a lot, very positively. He's a good man. She's a good wife. Be a good boy. But what exactly do we mean by these terms? And more importantly, what does the Bible mean by good? Well, it turns out in the New Testament there are two Greek words that are translated by the word good in English. One is agathos, and the other is kalos. Agathos means inherently, morally, or practically good, while kalos means aesthetically good, beautiful, and fair. Both words are usually translated good in our Bible, and yet sometimes they are used interchangeably and sometimes even in the same passage, such as the passage that John read from Matthew this morning. Listen to these verses again. You will know them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorns or figs from thistles? In the same way, every good tree bears good fruit, and the bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus you will know them by their fruits. Now you'll notice there's several pairs of trees and fruits there. There's good trees and good fruits, bad trees and bad fruits, bad trees and no good fruits, good trees and no bad fruits. Whenever the tree is good, the word that is used in Greek, the language is originally written in, is agathos. Whenever the fruit is good, the word used is kalos. But you don't get that, do you? Listen now as I change the words a bit, inserting maybe sound or healthy, maybe healthy for agathos and pleasing for kalos. You will know them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorns or figs from thistles? In the same way, every healthy tree bears pleasing fruit. But bad trees bear bad fruit. A healthy tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear pleasing fruit. Every tree that does not bear pleasing fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus you will know them by their fruits. So Jesus is telling a short little parable, and we get the aspects of goodness revealed if we open it up a little bit. And there are two aspects of goodness. Goodness in the Bible is both an inner quality and an outer expression of that inner quality. Thus, if you're a good tree or a good person, it is part of your inner makeup. It is the character of who you are. And if you are a good person, you produce good fruit. It is what you do. There's a commercial that does that, isn't it? It's what you do. If you're a good inner person, a good outer person is how that gets expressed. People of good character produce actions that are pleasing, beautiful, and good for the world. On the other hand, people of bad character cannot, in the end, produce any of that pleasing fruit. So if we are going to let goodness be our guiding principle, we have to begin with our inner selves, don't we? We have to begin with the very core of our being and see that it is good. What we would call our character, our moral foundation, those inner thoughts that we have. That's where we start to be good and express goodness. Of course, that's not easy to do, is it? For we are naturally turned to things that aren't so good for us or for the world. We turn away from God into selfish thoughts that would be anything but good. But Paul tells us in his letter to the Philippians that God will complete the good work that he has begun in you. See, the goodness we have within our hearts is not something we can create. It is something that God gives us. God is working to create in us a goodness. And it is a constant work. a constant work in progress, because every time we turn away from that good work, God draws us back. When we turn away, we call that sin. When God draws us back, we call that repentance and forgiveness. But it's a constant work. And God is at work in us constantly to develop the goodness in our core, in our soul, in our moral foundation. Of course, Jesus Christ is the primary instrument that God has done this work in us. Jesus came into this world to teach us what is good, and then showed us by how he lived, and then consecrated by living goodness all the way to the cross and the resurrection. Goodness is something that God has been working and continues to work in us so that we might become in our inner being that agathos, that good tree that bears good fruit. It is by the grace of God that we can live as good people. But what does that good living look like? Now, Paul gives us an idea in the passage that John read from Romans this morning. Love one another, outdo one another in showing ardor, be ardent in spirit, rejoice in hope, be patient in suffering, persevere in prayer, contribute to the needs of the saints, extend hospitality to strangers, and the list goes on. Our inner goodness, our moral character, if you will, is expressed in the actions, the fruit that we take into the world. Paul gives us a litany of what such actions might look like on a daily basis. This is what goodness looks like, he writes. It's not a comprehensive list. There never could be one, but for Paul, these are samples of how the life lived in goodness and the grace of God is lived out. And there is a humble strength in Paul's instructions. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Do not claim to be wiser than you are. Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but take thought in what is noble. In the sight of all, live peaceably with everyone. You see, our goodness becomes action, and it comes from our inner character, and the actions of goodness develop not only our inner character, but that of others. I think of the instructions that the prophet Micah gave. You know what is good, to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. We know what is good, for God has taught us that. But we have to work every day on expressing it and living it. And yet out of this humble strength comes power. The power of God manifested in that which appears weak. Paul goes on to write in Romans, "Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." In these few words lies the essence of living for goodness. You know, it was a week ago, last Sunday morning, that I was surprised to open the newspaper on the internet and see that there had been a shooting in Dayton, following on the heels of a shooting in Texas. We have seen in this past week the reality of evil in our world, and our natural tendency is to lash out, to strike back, to hurt someone, either with our words or with our actions. But Paul tells us that evil is not overcome with more evil. One form of evil may be defeated by another form of evil, but it is still evil. Paul tells us that evil is overcome in the end only by good. Goodness exhibits a humble strength. Against such goodness, evil cannot prevail. And in the end, that goodness not only defeats evil, but replaces it. It is not easy if one were going to choose to live one's life by goodness. But it certainly would be worthwhile. Amen.